This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
Rewind to Dynamite from the post-wrestling site, AEW, lighting up the fuse, sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay, where we're going, we don't need roads, and if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show, and if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
All right. If you are just joining us on the Post Wrestling YouTube channel, what a show you've missed. You've got to be getting up to date on everything that's going down in the world of post wrestling. Waiting's health update, all the news of the day, ranging from Yuma Aoyagi in All Japan, a big breakdown of NXT Gold Rush on Tuesday night, Seth Rollins speaking with Bert Kreischer, as well as his wife, Becky Lynch, and the latest on Shiloh Hill, week two. A big breakdown of his promo from Tuesday night and where exactly Shiloh is heading. Where are those bolt cutters?
I think he's just like, they're just squeezing this in right now so that he might still make some top of your list. I'm not saying which category, okay? But he might still make it or end of year.
At this point, he's going to be in the Royal Rumble. I think that's the trajectory here. I think he's heading the Saudi in January. Well, you can always catch our rundown of the day's news by joining the Post Wrestling Cafe. A lot of great stuff out this week, including Brandon from New Jersey and myself going through season 4 of Beverly Hills 90210. I don't know if this was the best or worst show that we have ever put out at Post Wrestling. I don't know what the audience reception is to this particular show. This was one that I finished, and I did not know what the how this show would be received. But it was fun to do nonetheless with Brandon.
I've only seen positive. I mean, you know, of the people who chose to listen to it, I think they really loved it, and I listened to a really big chunk of it just to hear how excited you guys were. And sometimes, like, you enter a conversation and I don't know what, like, my friends are talking about, but I'm amazed at the depth of their knowledge about this one thing. And I got that feeling from hearing you and especially Brandon, like, and the depth of how much you might know about this whole thing on top of all that you two already know.
Well, it will be up to you, the listeners, if we come back with a future 90210 show, because I want to make sure that there are people that are actually interested in this. So we will see. Unless Waiting demands it. But I appreciate you even listening, because you were not a 90210 fan growing up.
No, but I'm a John Pollock and Brandon from New Jersey fan.
Well, who could not be? So that is up for everyone on Thursday. I'll be with Neil Flanagan for our Double Double Espresso members. It is book club week, and we are chatting This Book Is All Elite by Keith Elliott Greenberg. Pretty much will be a discussion on the history of AEW and how it is chronicled in this book. And looking forward to this discussion with Neil. The book had just come out, so look out for that Thursday in your feeds. But before we get into Dynamite, a week from now, we'll be doing a special patrons pick edition of Rewind Away. Our patron has offered to put up his pick for everyone in the post community to vote on. So Way and I have made a short list of options, and we're going to put a poll up by the end of this show. And then Friday, we will read the results of what we are going to review on next Thursday's show. Did I get all that right, Way?
You did. These are always really exciting. I mean, our executive producers have the right to not select, and Cameron, in this case, decided to offer it very, very kindly. So thank you very, very much, Cameron Simon, to our patrons to decide. Now, of course, we can't just like have millions of suggestions. So John will offer two and I will offer two, and we will put this into a poll and we will ask you guys in the Post Wrestling Cafe to select. Shall we reveal our choices right now, John?
Yes, we should.
Okay. Why don't I start off?
All okay, right. You go first.
So it is December, okay? This podcast will be recorded and released on December the 4th. And of course, you got to talk about the holiday classics, John, okay? We reviewed this movie way back in 2009, but have not touched it since. And we are very different people right now, all right? So my first choice, I'd like to nominate the classic, the feel-good movie of the holiday season, Santa with Muscles.
Oh, dear. Santa with Muscles. That's the Bill Goldberg film. Correct.
No, that's Santa's Sleigh.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I was thinking too of Santa's Sleigh. Santa with Muscle. We reviewed this?
We reviewed Santa's Sleigh too way back, but
I remember doing Santa's Sleigh. I have no memory of reviewing this. This will pretty much be a 16, new watch for me.
Okay. 16 years ago, so yeah.
I'll take your word for it that we reviewed this. Okay, so I was mistaking this with a Santa's Sleigh. All right. That is a good one. Mainly because I am just coming off of having to go through all these Survivor Series events, I came across one that I think would be in our... It checks off several boxes. Ridiculous angles within this show. A great Hulk Hogan story about a particular spot. And it's got Vince McMahon on commentary. And more importantly, it's only 2.5 hours. It's a shorter pay-per-view. So I'm going with the 1991... Survivor Series in the spirit of just passing the Thanksgiving tradition.
Okay, so that's Undertaker versus Hulk Hogan.
Yes, and mainly they have just put this on the WWE Vault channel, so it's right there for everybody with easy access.
All right, the whole show, fantastic. Okay, so that is John's choice, Survivor Series 1991. Our third choice, I'll do this one. It is a little over, I don't know, 2 weeks from John Cena's retirement. So I'd like to talk about a match that I don't think we've ever talked about before on this podcast, at least. And that is his 55-minute match with Shawn Michaels from WWE okay. Raw, April 23rd, 2007. So that was one of the more famous John Cena matches, and about half the length of the entire show.
Yeah, yes, this was the England Raw. Okay, so the other one, this is more recent. I had not listened to this and really needed an excuse if I was going to sit down and watch this. I'm going to go with the Paul Heyman interview on What's Your Story with Stephanie McMahon.
Oh, all right. Okay, excellent. When was that released?
It was like 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago. Okay. Have you listened to much of the Stephanie McMahon interviews? What do you think?
Not really. I've maybe skimmed through I've seen some clips here and there. I don't think I've watched an entire one at all.
Okay. All right. So that is, so again, we've got Santa with Muscles. We've got the, Survivor Series 1991. We got the April 23rd, 2007 edition of WWE Raw with Shawn Michaels and John Cena's 55-minute match. And then we have What's Your Story with Stephanie McMahon and Paul Heyman. Those are our four choices. Patrons, you have until...
Friday evening at some Friday point. We'll announce the pick on Rewind to SmackDown. So okay. You have like 48 hours to vote. Where can people go vote?
PostWrestlingCafe.com. And why don't we make the poll available for all the free members as well, so you guys sure. can at least get involved in the voting.
All right. There you have it, everyone. So that will be announced on Friday. We will have Rewind to SmackDown coming your way. And Saturday evening, we will be back with a review of the Survivor Series right after the show concludes. That will be live on the Post Wrestling YouTube channel when that show wraps up. Four matches, 7 p.m. Eastern start time. What time do you think we'll start, Wei? Before or after 10 p.m.?
Is it 7 p.m. start or...?
It's a 7 p.m. start time.
Okay. I think 10:30, 11.
If they average one match per hour...
It's a War Games. Yeah, they could.
It's also Nikki Bella and Stephanie Vaquer, which should not get its own hour in that slot. I'm hoping it's 10:15 that we start. That's my hope. Okay. We'll see. We'll see how far off I am. On to Dynamite. We are coming off of Full Gear, and they are at Nashville's The Pinnacle, not to be confused with the group from several years ago. And WrestleTix number 1,424, although it does note that it could not account for the upper deck risers, which this building, its max capacity was 2,000. So it was not a big building to begin with, but they might have reached 2,000 if you're not factoring in the upper deck to this 1,400 number. But another like compact venue that they scouted for this show. And we have Excalibur with Tony Schiavone and Nigel McGuinness. No Brian Danielson, who they stated is at home for Thanksgiving, basting his turkey, and Nigel, without skipping a beat, wondering if Danielson's Thanksgiving will include some French cheese. Brie.
Oh, very nice.
He's a clever one. They preview the Continental Classic, and we have four tournament matches to start off. So for those unfamiliar, 20-minute time limit, 3 points for a win, one for a draw, and everyone banned from ringside. And kicking things off, a rematch from last year's tournament, one of the two losses that Okada has sustained in AEW, taking on Kyle Fletcher. And this was Okada's only loss in the tournament last year, en route to winning. And they are, I do want to make mention, if you go to forum.postwrestling.com, Bruce Lord has posted this great set of graphs for everyone in the tournament and their history of how many first-time matches are occurring and what their past records are as well. And Okada and Fletcher are 1-1 in the past, including last year's Continental Classic. So yeah, there you can see it. So as you can see, like for Darby here, these are mostly first-time ever matches with the exception of Pac. So Callis is on commentary, and Okada does this deal where he kicks referee Rick Knox into the rope and knocks Fletcher off balance, and then he's begging Knox for forgiveness. And then after the break, Fletcher does the exact same thing, and Okada falls down. Were these sensitive spots to watch tonight?
A little bit, yeah.
There's a belly-to-back suplex by Okada, and then comes off with the elbow, throws up the middle finger, and then it's Fletcher ducking the Rainmaker. Okada follows with a draping DDT to the floor, and then it's Okada firing up. Shotgun drop kick hits the tombstone, but the Rainmaker is countered with a Michinoku driver. Both men down, the crowd is cheering on, and Justin Roberts notes that there are only 5 minutes left, and Fletcher goes for a backslide, and it's turned into the Rainmaker. Okada holds on to the wrist, goes for a second one, which Fletcher ducks, lawn darts Okada, hits the last ride powerbomb. Okada stays alive, kicking out. Both nearly run into Rick Knox, and then Okada rakes the eyes. Fletcher ducks a Rainmaker and just rolls him up, catching Okada in 16 minutes and 46 seconds. And for the second year in a row, Fletcher beats Okada. He is the only one to have beaten Okada twice in AEW. I thought this got the tournament off to such a great start. It was a really entertaining match. And it also is, it just establishes, like you always do on like that opening weekend of G1. You do one big upset. And I would still classify this as a pretty sizable upset whenever you're beating Okada like this.
It's true. It's true. Although this year, I mean, last year was definitely an upset. This year, it feels almost like a coin toss type of result. I mean, I think somewhat justified through the interactions that these two have. I mean, they are promoted as the co-leaders of the Don Callis family. And not only that, you have Okada trying to convince Fletcher to be his tag team partner. I mean, mainly despite Konosuke Takeshita, but it's Okada asking Fletcher. So in my mind, I already saw these two very much as equals, and therefore this finish wasn't, it was still shocking because it was Okada taking a pinfall loss clean, but not as shocking as certainly it was last year. And not, it just goes to show how much of a leap Kyle Fletcher has made over the past year. And plus, of course, you know, but of course Fletcher also needed this because he just lost the championship to Briscoe. So it helps rehab him a bit. Quality of the match was really strong, went at a really good pace, good action. And again, just kind of like sucked us right into Continental Classic season, where every match is likely to be very strong and serious, no bullshit, no, and just like, you know, a palatable time as well for all of these.
And then Fletcher extends his hand and Okada is hesitating and he goes to put the hand in and he's about to give him the middle finger, but then he shakes hands with him. So a nice tease there by Okada, who's also got a new shirt with his giant face on the shirt and it just reads bitch underneath it.
A hint for the holiday season. Is that what you're offering?
I'm sure it's going to be a hot seller.
Okay. This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations. The holiday season is fast approaching, but if you still have a few people left on your shopping list, don't worry. Uncommon Goods takes the hassle out of holiday gifting with thousands of unique, one-of-a-kind presents you won't find anywhere else. Many of these gifts are high-quality, handmade, or crafted by independent artists and small makers. One standout gift this season is the personalized Pet Family Blanket, an exclusive item created by artist Shelley Klein and available only at Uncommon Goods. Shelley creates custom portraits in her sweetly simple illustration style, where you can customize skin tones, hair, clothing colors, and pet details to make it truly personal. Measuring 50 by 60 inches, made from soft cotton and polyester, it's perfect for snuggling with your furry family. Plus, each purchase supports small makers and donates $1 to a nonprofit of your choice, including the International Rescue Committee and American Forests. So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/postwrestling. That's uncommongoods.com/postwrestling for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
Lexi Nair goes to interview Kenny Omega, and she just asks straight up, are you reunited with the Young Bucks? And he says it's a complicated answer. I'm not a model employee. I once as well was fooled by Don Callis and basically says that the Bucks too were fooled. And if his friends are willing to accept my faults, then who am I to say the Bucks don't deserve another shot? But he won't definitively answer if they are back together. He closes the door, but then the door reopens and the Bucks walk out of said room and say hi to Lexi Nair.
So what is this meant to suggest?
That they're means they're back friends? Together, but we're going to squeeze this out for as long as we can.
But why would Kenny, like, what's Kenny's incentive to not just admit that they're back together?
They want to build this up to a segment that draws a quarter, I think. I think that's his thinking. These are EVPs, okay? You don't just give away this stuff in a pre-tape backstage. Got to build this up.
Yeah, I guess I can't really figure out maybe what the intent is for them to play this out this way. I thought they had just reunited and that they're friends. I mean, to even suggest that, or at least to... on the surface, suggest that, well, like I took it to mean Omega has accepted them back in.
But and I did take it like they lost their money as a result of this. To me, like Kenny should be a debt to these guys. They gave up $1 million, or they gave up $666,000 for you.
Right. Well, maybe they were negotiating the terms of the settlement. How much Kenny was going to pay them for becoming friends with them again.
Well, maybe that's going to be the segment, the negotiation of how much is owed. I'm not exaggerating. This might have been like the best thing on the show. It was this Mark Briscoe promo after Full Gear. And it was like the most subdued Mark Briscoe like you have ever heard. He's just, this is after Full Gear. He's still bloody from the match and just sitting in the back area with the belt. And he says that there's no words. He lost his brother, the other half of myself, and it's been a long road since then. I didn't know if I wanted to continue, but I had to do this for him, and I had to do this for us. and there was failure after failure, disappointment after disappointment, but there is a time and season for everything, and when family is on the line, that changes everything. I've got my home family and my road family, and this title is for both of those families. It's for Delaware, and it's for Jay. As he looks up to the sky, this is amazing, I thought.
A very strong promo from Mark Briscoe. I'm always amazed at these guys who are able to, like, right after these matches with their face covered in blood, deliver like some of their best work. You know, we've seen it quite often, you know, with wrestlers in this company. So, I mean, it just means that, well, especially in the case of Mark Briscoe, he can almost with very little preparation deliver something of real quality. And that just goes to talk about maybe how much of a great natural speaker he is, how much of a great natural storyteller he is. But also maybe it says something for like, the adrenaline that might be pumping into your body, helping you, like, in the blood on your face, maybe helping you get into the zone of, like, telling your story that much better. I don't know. But, yeah, these are always great.
He also smashed his head on the back of that chair, so he could have also been dealing with trauma as well. The Sisters of Sin against the Babes of Wrath in the semifinal of the Women's Tag Title Tournament. They're wearing down Harley, and Julia Hart does old school, a term that was coined before she was born. And there's a suplex to Sky Blue, and Harley makes the tag to Willow, who's only in briefly. And then Cameron's like back in almost immediately. There's a powerbomb by Sky Blue and sets her up for Julia Hart to hit the moonsault. And Julia went and extended. I have never seen someone overshoot a moonsault so much. Julia completely cleared the obstacle to the point that I was like really impressed at the distance she got. Like, she sometimes, like, the head will come down and it turns into a headbutt. This was further than that, and she just had to get up and like elbow drop her, and that was they just kept going. There's a blind tag by Willow as they're working on Cameron. Cameron hits a backstabber to Julia Hart into the Babe with the powerbomb, and the Babes of Wrath win the match in 11 minutes and 40 seconds going to the final.
Yeah. I thought it was okay. Like, yeah. I think the Sisters of Sin and Harley Cameron, they all looked very capable here, but it was certainly like the response to Willow coming in and her, you know, getting the most attention in this match that I felt was the continued highlight. And beyond those, I just don't know if much leapt out to me, especially compared to the other side of the bracket. This, I felt, was quite lacking in interest and also intensity.
Yeah, I didn't think that this one really shined to a great degree. I've really enjoyed the Hart and Sky Blue as a team together, but I didn't really think this one got going all that well. Like, the moonsault thing was what it was. It's not like that made the match fall apart, but it was... you know, on a show when you had all these like loaded up tournament matches, this one did not get that crowd to like that next level where this felt like, you know, and there were sizable stakes here of like getting to the final. And it really didn't feel like as big of a match, especially in comparison to the other semifinal that they are building up to that we'll get to.
Well, much of this is because so much of the storytelling real estate has been focused on that one match. And
yeah,
this match didn't even get that stipulation. You know,
well, it was part of my thinking of like this match probably could have used that as something extra, but you can see what they're doing with the other side of the bracket. Shivani brings out the ops for their celebration. Joe, Shibata, and Hobbs are out, and Joe sends Tony and his hillbilly ass out of the ring. And then Swerve pulls up in the back area, and he is wielding a chain and is handed a staple gun from Prince Nana and is joined by Hangman Page. And these two just march into the arena in their chains. And Joe sends Shibata to go get the scrubs. And the crowd is chanting for Swerve. The dojo students surround the ring. And Joe compares his mind to that of Sun Tzu. And all went according to plan. And just for you folks out there, we have put together a simple to understand video. Joe has been busy since Saturday, okay? Getting his final cut ready, and plays this video going back to Hook's return from injury, joining Eddie Kingston, the quick tap outs, and then the turn on Saturday. Didn't exactly piece this all together. Like, was this guy throwing matches? Was this guy just always... I had more questions after this video rather than everything just clicking together and like, oh, of course, you just spent 6 months for this run-in in the cage match. Of course.
The suggestion is that, yes, he was throwing matches, I suppose. So it could be debatable whether or not this was always the plan, or if they just happened to find like enough clips to be able to like piece together a story to be able to say, hey, this was always the plan. Either way, even if some felt they were successful in like telling this long-term story with Hook, I would say that they were very unsuccessful in driving interest into Hook in particular. That really is the biggest problem about this turn. Not necessarily whether or not it made sense or not. It's that people weren't expecting it because people weren't thinking about Hook really or his allegiances to the ops at all. It is also really ridiculous to think you did all of this just to do a run-in, you know, like in a cage match that you probably could have gotten away with without having done any of this anyway.
Yes. Their whole plan was to get to that go-home show last week where Hangman will call for the cage match. And then, boom, we got him. Just like we talked about 6 months ago. Uh-huh. I also think, like, it's a little thing, but when you do a major character shift, which I would classify this for Hook, I do think you need to do some kind of new type of look, just something. Like, not to say you have to change everything, but I just think, like, he needed something to just separate himself from, like, the slacker character into this, you know, we're, in theory, elevating this guy into a more significant role as a member of the ops. And I just, by the end of this segment, like, are you really intrigued by Hook's next move and who's going to be working with next, or much less a Hangman getting his hands on this guy? Like,
He got a new jacket.
Okay, well, then all's forgiven.
I think that remains to be seen. Like, or at least like the changes of this particular character kind of remains to be seen. I am intrigued to see like what a heel run will do for Hook. I mean, he's somebody who, since he's been talking, has been a babyface, and you know, I would suggest that he's kind of struggled with like getting that personality out there as a babyface. So, what do you do with somebody like that? You try to give him a run as a heel, where they no longer have to try to appease the crowd, and in fact, antagonizing the crowd will maybe hopefully help him unlock a different side of him. So, let's see.
So, with Hook out there, Swerve's music plays, as does Hangman's, and the two enter the arena. Hangman downs a shot at the bar, and they proceed to murder the dojo students, which I feel they're going to do in every single city, and we will never have any returning students. They busted a beer bottle over one dude's head. The ops take off and just leave the students for dead. They get stapled. They get power bombed, and then they hang two of the students with the chains over. The fatality rate was through the roof here. This was like Quentin Tarantino is booking these two characters in AEW.
I thought it was a lot of fun here, seeing like what, you know, you might consider the actual debut of our latest dream tag team in AEW in Swerve and Page, like probably the biggest rivalry in the history of this company, complete with coordinated outfits and weapons. How cute.
Yes. They need some kind of a name attached to them.
Of course they do.
Yes.
Got a suggestion?
No, but I'll definitely give it some thought. Moxley reacts to his loss of Full Gear and asks, who's really a winner and who's a loser when I'm here and Kyle's off to the hospital? It's not over between him and Kyle. People celebrate into an early grave, and people nearly celebrated this company into extinction. And now the playoffs are about to start.
Yeah, this is a great promo. Again, another one of those, like, right after the matches, you know, like, turn the camera on and Moxley, like, just breaks into something that is, I think, really perfect for the type of storyline that they're telling. I mean, he's pretty hysterical here, you know, trying to justify his loss, trying to play it off as if, like, it means nothing. You know, I could lose a million matches. He's trying to convince not just the audience, but his own Death Riders that losing means nothing, okay? What matters is
winning is a concept.
Yeah, that we keep the fight going. And I mean, a lot of people have picked up on like these looks that the Death Riders are giving him. You could interpret it as that. I guess it could also, like, they kind of look like this in every segment.
I mean, this is Pac both when he is deeply disturbed by his leader, and also when he's been given like a mid six-figure contract.
Yeah, when he's like, you know, thinking about what to order at Denny's, he looks just like this as well. So it may be kind of hard to read, but I think the continued story is pretty clear for everybody that the Death Riders are just waiting for the right moment to kick this guy out, or at least he's on very thin ice. I think we can.
Yeah. Imagine being the guy that is tasked with going to tell Pac about his latest visa issue, and you've got to fly back for a couple weeks.
Oh, my.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, hello, hello. Davey Portman here from Poison Rana. We cover NXT every Tuesday night on the Post Wrestling feed in a show we call Up Next. But we do so much more. Follow Poison Rana Pod on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts for our live Sunday show, plus our Patreon with movie reviews, retro wrestling reviews, and more. Find out everything at poisonrana.ca.
Moxley against Máscara Dorada. Surprise. A first time ever match between these two. So Moxley gets out of the way of Dorada's dive and lands his own suicide dive. Dorada comes back. They had the elevated ramp here, so they used it to great effect here. I don't know what it is. I don't necessarily think of this in other wrestling companies, but in AEW, when anyone does anything off of this ramp, it's impossible for me not to think of Adam Cole and just,
oh yeah,
it's like the most dangerous structure in AEW in my mind. And just watching Dorada and much more so Darby Allin, the stuff they do off of this stage.
It is a pretty tall fall, I guess.
Dude, Darby did a missile drop kick and just took a back bump coming off this thing. And it's like, yeah, it's a decent drop, especially when you're coming down right on your back. I don't care what's on the ground to protect your fall. Like it's a big jump. Dorada leaps off the ramp and Moxley just forearms him coming Love down. It. I thought this was such a great spot. It's like he did this spectacular dive and boom, one forearm and he just just face plants on the floor. So he works on Dorada's leg, tries for the pile driver, but onto the steps, and Dorada stops that, drop toe holds him, Rana off the steps, and then with a running cutter, drops Moxley on top of the barricade. Back into the ring they go. There's a code red. Moxley kicks out, and then he runs into a Moxley cutter, and now Moxley attempts the Death Rider. It's countered into a small package, and by this point, like, the audience is like buzzing for Dorada if he can pull off the latest upset over Moxley. Goes for the 450, only gets a two count, and then a shooting star lands on Moxley's knees, and he locks in the choke and puts Dorada to sleep in 12 minutes and 55 seconds, and John Moxley picks up 3 points.
Yeah, I thought this was an awesome match. I mean, really enjoyable clash of styles here, you know, because Mox's style is so grounded in violence and realism, and you have Dorada, who's one of the best high flyers in the world. So to see Moxley shut down this aerial offense with like very simple, realistic offense, like a big elbow strike or a submission like a Darce choke, I thought made the match incredibly fun to watch. And along with his continued like PTSD from selling submissions, I thought like made Mox such an interesting character to watch here against a very different style of opponent than he's used to facing.
He conveys the panic so well, and it's now at a point where the audience buys all these submissions because they've really hammered it home that you catch this guy and he will tap. So I think it's added a great aspect to the Moxley character. Whereas like 2 months ago, if we were to go into this tournament like this, I think they would have really struggled to get anyone behind Dorada. Just the idea that this guy would pull off the upset, even in a tournament where you are going to have some upsets.
The booking of Moxley is really interesting in this tournament because, I mean, he is telling a losing streak story of sorts. It's and he's broken that streak already. Yes, I understand. But overall, he's showing that he's an incapable leader of the Death Riders, right? But, you know, obviously in a tournament like this, he could still win at the beginning. and ultimately lose the tournament and still be considered a failure by the Death Rider. So it'll be really interesting to see what path they take him. Next week is Claudio versus Moxley, which is a very, well, I think, big match for, you know, this Death Rider story.
Shafir comes out after the match, and she is followed by Timeless Toni Storm. And
by the way, Moxley was like selling his like midsection a lot at the end of this match, and Tony called attention to it as well. He even came out in the final segment, like kind of like gingerly going over the barricade. So that might lead to more throughout the tournament.
Tony calls herself the toughest and least bitchy person in this ring. She likes Moxley despite his love of cargo pants. He operates in hate, her in love. And she refers to Marina as his cave woman daughter. And she woke up with Mina this morning and realized she hasn't gotten Mina anything for Christmas. But merry early Christmas, because she is going to give Mina the heads of two, quote, slut-tards on a platter. And next week, they will have a hardcore holiday death match in the semifinals.
Yeah, it's been a 10-day break from a really bloody match on AEW seems to be the pace that we're operating at right now. So this makes
a lot
of sense.
It's a good gap. Yes.
I am very much looking forward to this tag match anyway because of the great storytelling they've done from Blood and Guts all the way to the four-way and then of course to now. And I understand adding these stakes to it, giving the death match label and a women's death match on TV at that, like really kind of takes this to feel like a very worthy like highlight of next week's show.
Yes, in Indiana, which is it's a red state, and it's definitely going to be a red state next Wednesday.
All right.
Okay. It will flow. Renee's with Chris Statlander. She is the second woman in AEW to pin Mercedes Moné. And Chris explains how everyone's in disbelief of what I've done, and I'm begging them to believe it. And you can either look to the past, stay in the present, or head to the future. I know where I'm going. Who is with me?
Mm.
A very good promo where she had nothing to promote, push, or tease, and just basically cut a promo.
Yeah, like on a show where she just, you know, she was the victor. I mean, she didn't leave a big impression on this particular show. Really, it was Toni Storm that still kind of like sucked all the air, you know, out of the room and as far as the women go. But I think, like, again, Statlander is still very much a work in progress despite being champion. You can tell, like, every time she's out there doing a promo, she's still trying to find her voice. I think the company is still trying to help her find her voice. And I would say, like, there's still ways to go, but I'm seeing improvement. I'm seeing an improvement in her confidence, and I think in time they'll probably find something.
So we knew what that they're going to the UK for these shows coming up, but they made it clear that the December 13th show, which is airing, this is the one that airs at 2:30 in the afternoon, mm-hmm. So that will both avoid Saturday night's main event. Is it 4:30 or 2:30?
I believe it's 4:30 East Coast.
Okay. Because that's like, this is a UK show. This is Cardiff. Yes.
I'll double check right now.
That is Winter is Coming. And then December 17th in Manchester, England, that's the 3-hour show, which will be the Holiday Bash, which will be your 2 hours of Dynamite and one of Collision.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Darby Allin and Kevin Knight was next in the Gold League. And so the story of this match is that Darby has been destroyed, and Darby cannot come back from the brutal attacks that he has received over the last few weeks, including the second degree burns from Blood and Guts. So he kind of worked this match as though he's falling apart, and it did not tone things down. He took this monkey flip and just rotated into the ropes and is grabbing at his knee. Then he comes and hits this crazy somersault dive through the ropes. And I didn't know how this guy wasn't dead after landing this. They go through picture in picture. Knight hits a leaping Rana. And then it's a running missile drop kick from Darby off the ramp to the floor. He puts Knight into the ring, Last Supper, for a 2 count. And Darby is down on the ramp as Knight hits this flying clothesline outside of the ring, misses with the UFO splash, and is hit with the Code Red. Knight kicks out. And so Knight comes back, hits a coast-to-coast dropkick, and then lands the UFO splash, pinning Darby in 11 minutes and 56 seconds. A really great showcase of Kevin Knight in this match, and a really significant win beating Darby, and yes, gets the 3 points here, with the idea here that Darby is like at his lowest in this tournament, where he's got to do all these round robin matches and his body is failing him.
Yeah. This was the bigger upset of the two, in my opinion, you know, as far as like this and versus Kyle and Okada. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, it like we see in the G1, there's often one choice of a guy who gets that really early shine with like maybe some sort of winning streak before ultimately succumbing and not making it to the playoffs. But that person still really benefits from getting that spotlight and being the conversation for a few weeks before, you know, like he ultimately doesn't make it in the end. I think Kevin Knight is a perfect choice for that sort of role. You know, somebody who, you know, being a part of a tag team, like has gotten good airtime, but hasn't necessarily gotten credible wins. So to hopefully give him a number of credible wins at the start of this tournament, getting people to focus and talk about him at least for one to two weeks, before ultimately, you know, he doesn't make it to the semifinals. I think it's a great spot for Kevin Knight. And in this particular match, having the injuries to Darby coming so soon after the burning in the match certainly made it justifiable for him to lose. Darby doesn't lose a thing to, you know, from this loss to Kevin Knight. I really enjoyed Darby selling here, in fact. So really great action overall. Great showcase for Kevin Knight. So I did look that up. It's 4:30 on the 13th.
Okay.
2:30 on the 20th, the week after.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
These times,
this is
going to
be a mess
around
in December. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. FTR promo, or well, there was a video on FTR. They're the greatest team ever. They're going to talk on Collision. And then Eddie Kingston reacts to Hook, and he doesn't want to talk about Hook right now, but Joe brought up his name. He said, "I'm not in line for a title shot yet, but I can get one step closer by taking out Shibata." So he challenges him for Collision. And we can go over what's been announced for Collision. They are taping it tonight in Nashville. So in the tournament matches, there will be a Blue League match between Konosuke Takeshita and Roderick Strong, and a Gold League match between Pac and Speedball Mike Bailey. Eddie Kingston takes on Shibata. Ty Mello faces Tekla. And then we will hear from Ricochet and FTR in separate segments. So that's coming up Thursday night. Collision Course with Wei Ting and Kate from Montreal, a special Thursday night edition of the show on the Post Wrestling Cafe.
We're Canadians. We're not celebrating Thanksgiving. So, you know, go enjoy your turkey, my American friends. And then maybe if you put Collision on in the background, maybe listen to our podcast afterwards with me and Kate, probably up at about 10:15, similar time to today for Post Wrestling Cafe patrons. Yeah, Eddie Kingston, like, you know, he said he didn't want to talk about Hook, but I thought like his body language clearly conveyed that he was annoyed by
it. Yeah, he was like shaking his head. It was, more to come in the Kingston Hook Ascension.
Mm-hmm.
December on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we have two editions of Rewind Away set for you, including a patron's pick where you have voted for us to review the Survivor Series from 1991, Hulk Hogan's Gravest Challenge. Then it's over to 2002 and a review of the very first WWE draft involving Raw and SmackDown as they kick off the brand extension. David Bitsenspan is going to join me as we review Video Killed the Radio Star, a documentary on Bubba the Love Sponge, and the sex tape involving Hulk Hogan. Plus, we will have reviews of TNA Final Resolution, New Japan's World Tag League Final, Collision Course every single week, and XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Sign up now at postwrestlingcafe.com. And the main event, Claudio Castagnoli and Orange Cassidy. So this was the one historical pairing that I was somewhat surprised when I saw Bruce's outline here. I would think off the top of my head that these guys have faced off so many times. And I guess they have, if you include like tags and trios and stuff. They've had two matches in AEW, and one of them was just a couple of weeks ago for the men's advantage in the best of three. So they're having their second of three matches all in 1 month together. They're 1-1 in the past. And so Cassidy early on tries for a satellite DDT on the floor. It's turned into a swing into the barricade, and Orange is constantly trying to put his hands into the pockets, and Claudio prevents it. He deadlifts Orange by the pants, and Cassidy turns it into a DDT, makes his comeback, but after being beaten down for so long, can't lift him for the beach break. Hits a stun dog, and then comes off the top and is caught with a European uppercut into the giant swing, and then Claudio runs into an Orange punch. Orange gets pressed into the air, comes down with the DDT, and then gets pressed again and is hit with an orange punch. This time he hits the beach break. Claudio kicks out. Neutralizer gets countered. And one more press up for the European uppercut. And this time he hits it. Claudio wins 12 minutes and 28 seconds, tying John Moxley, who, as Wei mentioned, he will face next Wednesday on Dynamite.
Great match. You know, Claudio plays a great monster and Orange plays a great underdog. So, I mean, how could this really not work? I mean, it's a lot of fun watching Claudio like ragdoll these smaller guys. And I mean, I'm sure, I don't know how great it felt to be Orange Cassidy here, but to see him withstand the punishment before, you know, coming back with his awesome offense was ultimately resulted in a very good showcase for both men. Not one that, like, I think surprises us in the least because we know how great these two are already, but a very solid match to close the show.
I enjoyed the match. It wasn't my match of the show, but I still thought, like, really the tournament matches were all pretty entertaining in different ways on this show. Renee came in to interview the Death Riders, a rare Renee John Moxley segment together, kind of. And before she can even conduct her interview, Orange Cassidy is fighting with them. The Death Riders beat on Orange Cassidy, prompting Roderick Strong to run out, followed by Takeshita, Fletcher, Jetspeed, and Dorada. So it's all the members of the Continental Classic getting involved. Dorada hits a Orihara moonsault to everyone on the floor. Meanwhile, Okada is at the top of the ramp just watching all of this, and it ends with an orange punch to Wheeler Yuta going off the air.
Yeah, this felt like just one of those segments like you'd get before
War Games. That's what I felt like. Yeah, it was like, we've just got a bunch of these on Raw Monday night.
Or before like a Royal Rumble, like, oh my God, look at these people like inexplicably throwing each other over the top rope for no reason. Just, you know, just to give you a preview of what you're about to watch. Except in this case, like we've already been watching the tournament. Tournament has already started. I thought they
were going to announce an impromptu like six-man tag or something for Collision because everyone was there. But all of these people have also just worked like big singles matches on the same taping.
Yeah, you might get that. But like, I guess in my mind, I kept trying to think, what justifiable reason do each of them have to come out here to just like engage in this brawl? If anything,
there would be less. Like, it's cool that like Roderick Strong came to help like Orange Cassidy. But like, if I'm like Jetspeed, I'm like, let these guys kill each other. Like, we need all the help we can get in this tournament.
That
let
was Okada.
I'm
was
not going to help thinking. Any of these people. Okada's the smartest guy here. That's why this guy's going to win his block.
Yeah. Like, it just, I mean, it was a segment just to showcase the field for the Continental Classic, but I just felt like it was very, I don't know, inorganically produced.
Wrestling was very strong on the show. I really enjoyed Okada, Fletcher, and I thought Moxley and Dorada. I really liked like the styles contrast. Like, sometimes you'll get, and neither is a wrong way of going about it, but like a Kenny Omega in that situation, he's gonna like turn the match into like the strengths of Dorada and kind of work his style. Moxley's not gonna work Dorada's style. He's gonna double down on his.
Yep.
And both can work. They're very different, but it suits. Like, Moxley should not be trying to do Lucha with Oscar Dorada. And I think it was perfectly exemplified by the forearm smash spot. I thought it was a really great mixture of those two styles.
That might have been my favorite match, but of course Okada Fletcher was fantastic. I thought Knight and Bailey was really great too, as was Claudio and Orange. Like, all four matches I thought were
I was only disappointed with the women's tag. I didn't think that reached the same level, but yeah, all the Continental Classic matches, I thought it was a very strong opening night for the
It was a
tournament.
Great first night. Yeah, exactly. And this is going to be the standard, not just for Dynamite, but for Collision as well. Collision suddenly becomes must-see if you want to keep up with the tournament. So this is the period where you want to jump on, and if you haven't been watching Collision, a Thursday weekday show, I guess Thanksgiving might be tough for a lot of people.
It's unfortunate that Collision is going to have like this tournament as its backbone, and like, you can see like the schedule for December. Like, dude, it's going to be so hard for people to keep up with this show. Like, and Dynamite too. Like, you're going to have like Christmas Eve Dynamites. They're doing New Year's Eve. Like, I don't think this month is going to be a great viewership month for AEW.
Yeah, I don't know if we've talked about it so much on these shows. Do we want to remind people?
Yeah, we should pull up the schedule. It is schedule up on the site if you can scroll back a couple of days when we had the schedule, because it's a bunch of different
Okay, bear with us. I'm trying to find it. There's just a lot of news and a lot of great news at postwrestling.com, of course. Okay, I got it. AEW programming notes for December on TBS and TNT. So it's going to be a bit crazy throughout the month of December because it starts on Saturday, December 13th, where AEW Collision will be at 4:30 p.m. Eastern time. As John mentioned, this is a show from Cardiff. And of course, this is also the night of John Cena's retirement, which is probably the main reason why this edition of Collision is going to 4:30 p.m. Eastern time. Then on Wednesday, we have a 3-hour edition of Dynamite with, you know, Collision.
They're treating this like their go home week because they don't want to be doing all this on the Christmas Eve show, which is going to be, obviously, it's out of its time slot and it's Christmas Eve. So it looks like they're just doing the hard push for the pay-per-view 10 days early.
Friday, December the 19th, as a programming block listing more Dynamite, Rampage, and Battle of the Belts from 2022. What?
I almost wonder if that was just a mistake in the press release. Like, I don't understand why they'd be airing. It sounds like they're just going to have an AEW block. I would imagine it's going to be more updated than Battle of the Belts from 2022. It just sounds like they're going to put AEW programming on Friday for whatever reason.
Gotcha. Well, if you want to watch AEW Collision that particular week, it starts at 2:30 p.m. as opposed to 4:30 the week before. So you'd be...
These are all Eastern time.
Resetting your DVRs for that. And then Wednesday, December 24th, we have Dynamite on 34th Street at 6 p.m. Eastern time. Not 8 p.m. the usual, but 6 p.m. Eastern time on Christmas Eve. Thursday, December the 25th, Collision Christmas airs at 9 p.m. Eastern time. And then, of course, we have Saturday, World to End, December 27th. No tailgate brawl listed. And then New Year's Eve, Dynamite, New Year Smash at 8 p.m. Eastern time.
Which is a live show. They're doing on New Year's Eve.
Fascinating. Yeah. I don't know. Can you just like negate this entire month of ratings for this?
I mean, it's not going to be a great indicator of AEW's popularity given all of those preemptions and moves that are going to be very hard to see how they do. Part of me wonders like what the audience will be like on Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve. It might be a real great indicator of the AEW audience. Somehow I feel like this male 18 to 49 audience, when it comes to like family and AEW, I think that AEW might win out for some of you. We will see. We'll learn more about the AEW audience this month. All right. We're going to say goodbye here on the Post Wrestling YouTube channel, but we will be back this Saturday night after Survivor Series. Hit the subscribe button. We appreciate your comments and, whatever you do with our show. And of course, check out our YouTube shorts. I mean, our team of Sean and Luke Hale are doing fantastic work on such a daily basis.
Yeah. Also, Instagram stories. You can follow us on Instagram. Follow us on TikTok at Post Wrestling Official, if that's your preferred platform.
Shiloh, give us a follow.
That's right. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going to continue over at postwrestlingcafe.com. We'll go through your feedback and questions.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care. For prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com. $6 gets you in the door.